Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Women took their children out and walked for hours, just walked around for hours, because they couldn't stay at home.
At first, it was a bit of a shock, like a shock to the system. You didn't go out past your gate.
I didn't understand the way I was feeling. I just thought that I was the only person that ever felt like this.
From the news team at Virgin Media Ireland, this is Room 631, Ireland's COVID crisis. I'm reporter Zara King. This six-part podcast series contains the unheard tapes from the Virgin Media News documentary team. These episodes come from hours of footage taken during the making of our documentary, Ireland Under Lockdown. Throughout the series, we'll hear the thoughts of key decision makers who sat inside the walls of Room 631 at the Department of Health, and the voices of the people whose lives were changed by those decisions as a global crisis unfolded in their homes.
I remember thinking to myself, it was so sad that they got me as a mother. My name is Yvonne Murray and I live in Tower in Cork. So there's no shame in admitting that you're not feeling right, but I know myself at the time, I didn't understand the way I was feeling. I just thought that I was the only person that ever felt like this. So I had my second daughter, Roisin, back in October 2019. And January of this year, I was diagnosed with postnatal depression and anxiety. And coupled with therapy and medication, I was doing a lot better, quicker than I ever thought that I could feel a lot better. And then the pandemic hit and everything changed.
On the news today tonight, it's a level 5 6-week lockdown.
Significant and indeed quite shocking the degree to which these measures have been escalated, as we were
the
saying.
The bulk of the population has to observe the stay-at-home advice. Except for
Friday,
limited.
Like no other, the country remains on lockdown as restrictions on the movement of people are to be extended until May the 5th.
And for you, was it lockdown that kind of triggered a lot of the feelings you had been feeling initially in January?
I just wasn't feeling great. I was feeling sad. I remember thinking to myself, and it's terrible looking back on now, it was so sad that they got me as a mother. And to even think that, I can't believe that was me thinking that. Now, I still get anxiety attacks now and I'm still kind of up and down, but that was a really, really low point for me. But I have come a long way. I still not 100%. The anxiety is definitely still there, and it's still something I'm working on. Seeing the therapist and back on the medication, and it's probably something I'm going to have to work on for a while. But I'm more aware of the signs if an anxiety attack is coming on. I'm more aware if I'm feeling low, what it is that it's not. Me as a mother, it's just my mental illness at the moment. And I think the more we talk about it, the more open people will be and to realise that they're not alone in the way they feel. Now, I personally, I can only speak for myself and share my story and with my postnatal depression and anxiety. And I know that other people have different forms of it. So I can only, all I can do is share my story and hope that with me sharing it, I can help someone else that might feel that they're alone. But I thought I was alone, but I was never alone. I just didn't realize it.
And you mentioned, you touched on it already, I mean, do you worry about the future? You worry about what's kind of coming over the next few months?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like I'm probably a natural born worrier, but then with the anxiety and what it like everyone craves for the day for it to return back to normal. I certainly do. And you just worry are we going to go keep going into this cycle of lockdown, back to semi-normal lockdown? Like, where is the line going to be drawn if we're going to have to live with it for another few years down the line? Then we can't keep doing what we're doing, and it kind of defeats the purpose if we're locking it down and then opening it up just to see the figures rise again and going back into lockdown. I have no answers. I am always worrying about tomorrow, let alone next year. I have tried really hard with these restrictions and what's asked of me, and I don't think anyone has. I probably haven't given it 100%, but I have definitely tried, and it's just the minority of people that haven't put in the effort, and who's to say where we would be now. But I would definitely worry about the future because it's unknown. And for my mental health as well, it keeps going around in circles that I'm doing really, really well, and then all of a sudden I'm hit by anxiety and everything is not going right, and questioning how good I am at being a mother and providing for them in this pandemic. Like, what are we doing other than going for a walk around the block? You know, it's tough. And then with my job as well being back, I think it would have helped me a lot still being in the office than working from home, even just for my mental health, regardless of trying to get on top of things again. So there's a lot of different factors, and I know for one there's a lot of people in worse situations for me, but it is tough. It's a tough time for everyone.
Deirdre Waters, Head of Communications, Department of Health. People were telling us about how they were feeling from a mental perspective, how they were reacting to the restrictions. We know that for people who were newly unemployed, it was really, really tough, especially for anybody who was newly unemployed and didn't have a partner and was living in their home on their own, not being able to go out, not being able to meet with their mates. It was really, really tough for them. So we have known, and people have been telling us the whole way through, how they're thinking and feeling about this pandemic. And yes, that's played into it plays into our NPHET on a weekly basis, and it plays into our thinking, it plays into our decision making constantly.
I don't know what way my hair is. It's all over the place.
You look lovely. You look really lovely, I promise. So just your full name first for the tape.
Okay, Geraldine Murphy.
Great. And Geraldine, how long have you been retired?
I'm retired, it'll be 10 years next month. At first, it was a bit of a shock, like a shock to the system. You didn't go out past your gate. You just didn't go. And so I was trying to exercise, walking up and down the hall and into the front garden. Fortunately, the weather was good. I went through a period of feeling pretty down. And every time I'd get down, I'd say, look, my parents and grandparents got it much worse than us. They had wars and all sorts of things happening. And, you know, here we are, sit on the couch and watch TV, you know, get real. So I'd have to talk to myself very sternly.
It's been such a massive shift from what you've been used to. Your life has completely changed.
Yeah, it was a complete turnaround. I found it very difficult in the beginning. Then after a week or so, I can't remember exactly when, Mass on the... we have a camera in the church, and Mass on the internet, the priest announced that there'd be no Easter. And that just kind of hit me because I'm involved in the choir. We have a big choir of about 60. We're like a huge family. And when he said that, that got me. And I was a bit tearful over that. And that kind of brought it into reality. And the whole thing extended from there. So, but then you kind of, it kind of hits you gradually. Yeah.
When it hits you, what is that sort of realization?
It's a sort of loneliness, you know, because none of my friends are within 5 kilometres. My close friends are within 5 kilometres. They're all a little bit further. And so if I want to do anything, it's over the phone or over the Zoom or whatever.
And it's been difficult because a lot of people over 70 will say, I've always been so active, like yourself, and this has been a real life changer. I mean, you're probably having those conversations with your peers and with your friends. What are you hearing from them?
And with myself.
Absolutely. And I suppose, what are you hearing from them, and how are they actually feeling? Are they feeling lonely and isolated at this point in the pandemic?
Yes, they are. Some are being very strict with themselves and not moving out at all, going for the walk, coming back, the same walk, the same thing, and being extremely careful and not having anybody into the house, even when it was allowed. Others are trying to be somewhat normal and live with it and only have part of their family come as a bubble to them. And the other part of the family are kind of annoyed that they're not able to come, but really they're trying to abide by the rules, and it's extremely difficult.
And can I go back to that point that you made when you say we're told we're a vulnerable group? How do you feel when you hear that kind of narrative spoken about you and your peers?
That kind of, like, I never felt old. Age was a number. And this has made me very conscious of my age. I wasn't conscious of it before. In fact, I used to give out to my brother and say, what's wrong with you? You're only 80. Age wasn't important. But and I used to think, well, 70 is the 50 and 80 is the old 60. And I'm fine and I'm grand and I'm healthy, thank God. But now you start looking at everything, and a lot of friends, although they didn't have COVID, a lot of friends or acquaintances or people I knew have passed away and have died, and it just makes you very conscious of your vulnerability, because you've been told you're vulnerable. And so it did kind of strike you. Really, I wasn't too happy hearing it, but I thought, well, I better sort of abide by things because they are trying to help us. But then as it went on and they were saying, well, next time they came and you're vulnerable again. And I thought, well, wait a minute. We've never really come out of that. Stop telling us we're that vulnerable. Stop telling us to stop doing things, because we actually didn't start doing them at all. We didn't. Most people in my age group try to contain themselves and not move around much and only go for certain walks, even when people were released. So we are very aware of where we're at and the dangers of it all. And I think this time that they, the October, November time of telling us to do what we feel is right almost, I think that is a much more intelligent way of approaching it, because we know what we're about. We know where the problems are. And the fact that we can bubble with a group and that we can use our own intelligence to understand how to attack this thing, you might say, or to live with it. That's a better approach for us.
And has it changed how you perceive the dangers in the world and I suppose the threat that is out there in terms of the virus? Does all that, your perception of things, change when you're told, oh, you're over 70, you're in a vulnerable category? Does it sort of change your mindset in a way that you probably didn't anticipate it would have changed before?
Well, yeah, it does. It makes you conscious of your age when you wouldn't have been before. Prior to this, age was just a number. In my 70s now, I thought I felt like I was in my 50s, and I didn't worry about it. But when I was told I was in my 70s and I was vulnerable, I stopped and I thought, well, oh, I'm vulnerable. I had to consider myself as vulnerable. And I did actually take it on board. And I find that most people in my age group are doing that. And they're realizing that they are in a vulnerable age group when they never felt vulnerable before. And now they feel that, they have to be careful and they have to do this and they have to do that, yeah. It's not about dying with it, it's about living with it. We've got to make ourselves aware of how we can do it well and enjoy it and be ready for when it's over, because it will be over. Yeah. And next year we look back and we'll say, did that really happen? Well, I've kept a diary so I can read it up.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door.
Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
The battle against COVID in healthcare settings is an ongoing one, but for the general public, the first line of defence is to simply stay at home. But for some, home is not the safest place to be.
Was that the first time? You're not on your own.
It's been really tough to say that it's been a very poignant and difficult time for all of the frontline workers is, you know, an underestimation of the impact, obviously from the helpline perspective. But what we didn't really anticipate was the level, the increase of calls. And we knew that women would be absolutely terrified to find themselves locked in with their abuser. The sheer helplessness and hopelessness in the majority of callers that we supported through the time was very sad, very sad.
When you talk specifically about the issue of domestic violence, we now know and we have the data. In the earlier days, we had, you know, the strong sense coming from An Garda Síochána that they were getting called to more of these kinds of circumstances. We feared that those realities would arise for some women and for some families in difficult situations, where the use of, for example, alcohol and so on would become a domestic rather than a public thing, and all of this was more under the carpet and harder to see.
My name is Sumi Dunn. I'm a GP in Port Arlington.
And another example that we have in the documentary of just how lockdown affected people was in terms of protecting women and families and domestic violence. So we've heard anecdotes and stories, I guess, of women who found themselves in a situation where the abuser was weaponizing COVID-19 and deliberately maybe not washing hands, horrific events where they would have been people cough into their face. You know, there was a lot of sort of really difficult anecdotes about that. Were you seeing an increase in people asking for help?
We certainly did see through phone calls. We did see a lot of women, not just women and men, you know, that were struggling at home. With partners. We were also very cognizant to stay in touch with people that we had previously known possibly to have had issues, either with a phone call to say your prescription is due and use that as a conduit to a conversation, or even asking one or two to come in specifically, knowing that that small amount of time in general practice is a safe place. And kept emphasising that general practice is a safe place. It's a safe place to talk. We will listen. We will support you. We are here for you. You know, we believe you. And to keep saying the same thing. But what we do know is that a lot of our people that have experienced domestic violence, it takes multiple presentations before they actually feel that they can say something. And quite often you felt that the conversation was going to open up, and then there could be a door opening that you could hear on the phone, and then the conversation retracted back. So very aware, very cognizant, very tough. And again, we were mindful that home was not a safe place for a lot of people.
Anytime you feel that you want to pick up the phone, just give us a call. Linda Smith, the National Helpline Manager with Women's Aid. We would have seen in the first 3 months anyway of the pandemic a 43% increase of contacts to the helpline. At the time there was a 2 kilometre zone that you couldn't go beyond. Women took their children out and walked for hours, just walked around for hours because they couldn't stay at home. We'd older women calling whose husbands would have been always abusive in their married life, and just again because of the lockdown, just being stuck with that person day in, day out, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, it just exasperated and amplified the abuse that they would normally experience. It's the lock-in. It's literally the lock-in. Not being able to go to visit family or friends, not to just go to the shops for a few hours, you know, just to do the normal things that would just take them out of that situation. Yeah, it was just ever present. The threat and the abuse was ever present. So, women, what we didn't expect were women calling us to say that they'd been out of the abuse for years, hadn't seen their abuser for years, but the lockdown replicated, being controlled, being isolated, can't move here, can't go beyond 2 kilometres, can't visit friends. It really triggered the feelings of the abuse, and that was something that we did not anticipate.
And what struck me there was when you spoke about the idea of women taking their children, walking out of the house and sort of walking aimlessly around their 2 kilometres all day just to get away from the abuse in the house.
Yeah, and like women will, you know, they'd get into their car, they'd drive, they'd sleep in the car overnight if that's what they had to do to keep themselves safe, do you know? Women weren't feeling that they could go to family or friends, and that they wouldn't go to family or friends because they didn't know if they were going to spread the virus, do you know, if they had it, or, you know, I mean, that was the whole objective to going into lockdown, that we'd suppress the spread of the virus. So people really took that seriously, and it wasn't an option to go to family or friends. So if they had a car, they'd stay in their car.
Abusers were weaponizing COVID-19.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's a whole new way of, it's a whole new wave and a whole new form of abuse that you've
A new type of abuse, yeah. Definitely not, do you know. And I suppose for women with disabilities, it was at their most vulnerable, do you know, and still no let up in abusing that person or exposing the kids to that abuse, do you know. It was just really difficult for women on every level, do you know, even financially. They wouldn't be able to, they weren't allowed to go to the shop. He'd go to the shop. He wouldn't wear a mask. He wouldn't wash his hands. Women who had rung us with disabilities or, you know, had underlying conditions would say that, you know, he was using COVID to put her at risk, like coughing at her, spitting in her face, just deliberately not washing hands, not, you know, not being hygienically clean around, you know, what we were asked to do, basically. So women felt very attacked on all fronts, really.
And was there ever a point when you're taking these calls and you're listening to these women in very dangerous situations that you're frightened for them?
We don't need a pandemic for that, I'm afraid. We get calls from women who are, you know, in serious danger of being murdered, being killed. Women have told us that, you know, that he's told her, you'll die, I'll kill you, and no one will ever find your body. Do you know, this is not exceptional in pandemic, unfortunately. And sometimes just the mere threat of that is enough. That person need not be physically violent, may have access to firearms, may have a baseball bat just beside the couch, just to let her know that that's there, that weapon is there, and I will use it if I need to use it. Those options for us, which would be a next go-to option when physical threat or danger or an escalation of risk to the women or children were very present, that really wasn't an option because of the guidelines, the COVID-19 guidelines. We definitely noticed a huge increase in women who were feeling suicidal, feeling that there's no way out of this. I'm not going to be able to get out of this. And, you know, if I don't do something, he's going to kill me. So it was that serious. Home is not the safest place to be for some women.
And at the very beginning of lockdown, we'd heard from the Gardaí that they would prioritise, it would be an absolute top line priority for domestic violence calls. Did you see that happen?
We did. We experienced huge support from the guards, which is great. For us, as a frontline service, we encourage women to contact the guards daily. Do you know, if you're in fear or if you're in danger or if your safety's compromised or you're worried about the kids, contact the guards. They'll respond, you know, and their assurance gave us the assurance to, you know, ensure that women really did reach out and had trust and confidence in the guards that when they called, they would get a rapid response, do you know. And yeah, we had very good feedback from women that the guards were really helpful and supportive, which was brilliant.
And finally, Linda, there will be women who'll be watching this tonight who might recognise some of the things that you've spoken about, and it might be just a moment of realisation for them that actually what they're experiencing is some form of abuse. What would you say to those women this evening?
If somebody recognises, you know, that they might be in an abusive relationship, it's okay to say, I think I am in an abusive relationship, but I'm not 100% sure. I think that's a question that a lot of women ask, but aren't sure whether it is domestic abuse, domestic violence. A lot of women do not associate domestic abuse with emotional abuse or psychological abuse, coercive control, but it most definitely is part of the service, the specialist service that we offer. But I think the biggest thing is that women do not feel further isolated through COVID, that if they do and if they can make a call or link in with the instant messaging service, is to have that outlet and to own that outlet for yourself, because you deserve it. You deserve to get the support, to feel heard and believed. And yeah, you're not on your own. There's lots of women out there who are probably experiencing exactly the same thing that you're experiencing right now. And I think the first step is the hardest, is to reach out. But when you do, things will become clearer and better, hopefully.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.